Movies you forgot, you forgot. Listener, hello, this is a message from me, Joe Devine. As you may have noticed, this episode was released on a Tuesday instead of the usual Monday. And I just wanted to let you know that Tuesday going forward is going to be our permanent release day. So, you know, don't finish your weekend, commute to work on a Monday morning, check your phone in fury, and be very, very sad. Because Tuesday morning will bring you all that you've ever dreamed of. And or sort of mildly interesting non-discussion about a film. So it's Tuesday from now on. And a quick reminder that whilst this is a special Oscars episode, at the end of last week's episode, The Thomas Crown Affair, we did pick Passengers as a film, and that episode will be coming out. It's coming out next Tuesday. So that's all from me for now, except it isn't, because there's a whole hour of me. Hope you enjoy today's episode. Thank you for listening and telling everyone in your life about it and that you're listening. Okay.
Welcome to the Oscars.
I feel gross. I hate this. Do you know what? Before we get into any of all that sort of stuff,
what?
Can we do a little letterboxed bit of outreach?
Oh, of course you can.
One of our emailers, Lloyd, I think you remember.
Yeah, I remember Lloyd. How could I forget?
This letterboxed outreach is just to underline that if you follow me, I not only will follow you back, I'll start to kind of lurk and read your reviews and I might comment on them. So Lloyd, I left him a little comment.
You did some outreach.
A little outreach. And then he said, oh, thanks. Thanks. So then I just thought, he's got some really good reviews on Letterboxd, so I thought I'd read some of them.
Terrific, yeah.
So this is him on Poor Things. I'm pleased it exists. I'm pleased that it's ambitious and different and bizarre and eccentric. I'm pleased that Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Mark Ruffalo and the rest of the cast are being praised because they're all really good. I'm pleased it's doing quite well financially, and I'm pleased the screening I was in had lots of people in it. It is pretty shit, though, and ultimately just pretentious guff. Probably just not for me, but when I think who of the people I know would enjoy this, I can probably say a maximum of two, and I know people. And I read that, and that was in there's nothing but positive reviews. So that pops up.
Wow.
And I thought, yes, please.
Lloyd. And Lloyd is, of course, referring to a film nominated for the 2024 Academy Awards, nominated for 11 awards.
Yeah, but that's fine. And then, like, you know, he's got a lovely little Ghostbusters Afterlife review, 1.5 stars.
Yeah.
Who is this for? It is simultaneously a boring movie for children, teenagers, adults, fans, and non-fans. The ending is like a shit comic relief sketch. Why are we still getting Ghostbusters films 40 years later? The acting is all fine, by the way. So, you know, that's very much my speed.
that really is your speed. And I love it too. Yeah. Lloyd, and I'm very sorry that Lloyd's getting caught up in the middle of this, but this is my episode and I intended to start it in a different way, okay? So I don't know if you want to take a chill pill or a backseat or whatever it is that, you know.
People to know that if you follow me on Letterboxd at Error of Ways, I will follow you back.
Are you done now?
Yeah.
Joe is the host now. The dynamic works worse when Joe is the host. Adam prefers to be the host, but today Adam is the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. But today is a special Oscars episode. The ghost, 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 the ghost.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, today's host, Joe Devine. And I'm joined by simply a participator on this episode. It is Adam Richmond. Hi, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. Just at Mother's. Just watched Greyhound, starring Timothy Hanks.
Yeah.
And really want to get into talking about Oscar movies, because I love the Oscars.
Well, I'm so glad you've come to today's episode with that kind of energy, because that's the energy that's going to be needed from you for the next 60 minutes or so. I've got a lot of fun prepared for today's show, including the bulk of it will be a game that we've decided upon. I've also got a lot of trivia, going to drop some bits of Oscars Academy Awards trivia in there as we go. And I've even got a special box office game for you as well to play towards the end. So it's going to be a really exciting show.
And I'm looking forward to derailing it at every opportunity.
The main thrust of today's episode will
Can I just interject? I've got to interject. Uh-huh.
What's that? Yeah. What have you got? You got something to say?
Just remember how when we did this when we did the podcast initially, and you were the host, and you had really set ideas about what an episode was.
Yeah, and you were completely inflexible, and then we had to change everything in order for you to be happy. Is that what you're talking about?
What I'm saying is, I love that you've got a plan.
Yeah, it's a great plan.
But just be open to the fact that we won't necessarily do all of it, and that I may at some point take the reins.
Well,
I've allowed this, just so you understand that.
Now,
I've
the
allowed
Oscars
this.
Game that we're going to play today is it's called the Oscar game. Okay, and here are the rules. Adam and I have each selected a list of five films, Oscar-winning films.
Five. So should we come on? Let's do three. I think five's too much.
Anyway, we've each prepared a list of five films. How many we will discuss will depend on the discussion that we're about to have. Okay?
Yeah. Now you're talking.
Now, listen. Here are the rules, right? The films that we've picked follow these rules. They have to have won minimum three Oscars, of which those three, minimum one, has to have been one of the top five, okay? Best film, best director, best actor, best actress, and best screenplay. So at least one award has to have come in one of those categories, and a minimum of two in others. And of course, the idea of this podcast is that we're trying to pick Oscar-winning films that are the most forgotten. Now, the reality is that it's going to be hard to come up with any that are going to really shock or surprise you, the audience, or each other. But to add a little bit of spice in there, we've set some additional rules that say that if we both have the same film on our list, we both lose in a game that doesn't really have any stakes because the rules aren't that clear. Are you clear on that, Adam?
Yeah, I think we did chat about that, losing points. Just because we've both gone through, there's a kind of a spiritual, this is all about spiritual victories.
Yeah.
So given that we've both done research, the same research on a very small pool of films, we will both have seen the film names.
It's on a system.
Because I've got more than five on my list.
Right, you've added more than five. That's okay.
And it'd be like a hands up, I was absolutely going to say that one, and we both lose.
I'm glad that you're being so honest with me. Can I be very honest with you?
Yeah.
I forgot that screenplay was one of the big five, and so I think my films might be quite a lot more well-known than yours. I don't think you're going to have forgotten that all of these films exist, but you might have gone, oh yeah, that one has been forgotten, air quotes, by the general consensus. That's what we're tapping into. We're zeitgeist mediums for today.
As I was doing the list today, I was thinking, I've forgotten that film.
Yeah.
And if I have that feeling when you say your thing, if you get me on that, I'm going to represent that feeling. Ultimately, it's going to be excuses for us to talk about a series of films.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it, really.
Yeah.
It's arbitrary content.
Also, I should say that I wanted to only choose from films that have won Oscars during the period of time when I've been watching the Oscars. The earliest I've gone back is 2007.
And I didn't, I mean, I went back further, but I stopped at 1990, because I just thought, well, I'd just be saying film. I'd just be saying words to you, and you'd go, what?
Yeah.
Who's that? Huh?
Well, listen, before we get started, would you like to hear one little piece of Oscars trivia?
How many bits of Oscar trivia have you got?
Four, and I'm going to dot them throughout the episode, and one of them is the box office game.
So can, for each time, I'm going to guess if I knew it or not.
I don't think you're going to know.
Well, so, okay.
One of these is a quiz for you.
Okay.
The other three are not things that you will know.
Well, I might do.
You might do.
So anyway, this first one, I'm going to guess I know.
Guess, right? Oh, you're going to guess before I've even said it.
No, I'm just going to guess I know it.
Right.
And then you say it, and then I'll say if I know it or not.
Okay, so you guess you know that the first Technicolor film to win the Best Picture was...
Gone with the Wind.
It was Gone with the Wind.
But that's not the trivia. That's not the trivia. The trivia is that it was actually 5 years after the first release of a Technicolor film. So that's the trivia. I love the idea that Technicolor came out and films were being made in Technicolor, but the best film at the Oscars for 5 years after that was still a black and white film. That's the trivia.
Mate, that is so trivial.
Wait until you get to the next one. Right, I'm going to hit you now with my first film of my five. Okay, you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
But I'm going to say one of the reasons I've picked this is because there's a couple of fun, surprising things about it, okay? It's Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I mean...
Is it on your list?
It is very much on my list.
Yeah, but how many films did you write down?
The only reason I wouldn't have read this one out is because it's
how
so...
How many films did you write so down obvious. On your list? How many?
Let's have a think.
Because you're only supposed to
one,
write five.
Two,
if you write more
three,
than five...
Four, five, it's... six, seven, eight, nine. Oh.
One thing that we haven't said on this podcast before about Slumdog Millionaire is that it won 8 Oscars. That's the main reason I've included it on this list, because that is a huge number of Oscars. Only 7 films ever have won more than that.
Do you know why?
Why?
I know why.
Why?
Because it was a really weak year.
Oh, tell me about the year.
The year, you've got Milk, The Reader, Frost Nixon, and Benjamin Button, and Doubt. And out of those, the only film that is strong in any sense is Milk.
Frost Nixon's quite fun.
It's not, no, it's not about, we're not talking, let's cut the shit. We're not talking about fun or enjoyable or good. Those films are all watchable. I'm talking about strong. We're talking
strong for Oscars.
Oscar strong.
Because there is a film from that year that I think it has really survived the test of time that I think you would agree would be a fine Best Picture winner.
All right, yeah. What?
The Dark Knight.
Yeah, and that wouldn't have won because of snobbery.
What's the snobbery?
The members of the Academy are mainly kind of white old men who part of like of the Hollywood elite.
The machine.
Like you get invited to be a member of the Academy, and yeah, sure, like a lot of big name actors are going to be a member of the Academy and can vote, but then there'll be loads of them you've never heard of because they've been around since the 40s or whatever. They produced a film a million years ago. So it's the same reason why the Tories still get elected in England. Like, that's what the Oscars is. And yet everyone just fawns over it.
Now, Slumdog Millionaire won 8 Oscars, which is an absolutely huge number of Oscars.
Good number.
There are only 7 films ever that won more Oscars than Slumdog Millionaire did. Can you name any of them?
Like, I don't know, Titanic?
Yes, Titanic won 11 Oscars in 1997. What else you got?
Gone with the Wind?
Gone with the Wind did not win more than 8.
Didn't it?
Gone with the Wind did win 8.
Oh, and we're going more than 8.
There are only 7 films that have won more than 8, yeah.
So we've got Titanic.
We've got Titanic. There are 2 other films tying Titanic with 11 as the most ever won. We've talked about one of them fairly recently.
Schindler's List?
No. One of them famously held the title for decades, which should give you a little hint in terms of when that was released. And the other one we talked about on an episode which was sadly not released.
Oh, right. Oh yeah, I was just about to say that. Yeah, so Lord of the Rings, The Three Kings.
Yeah, The Three Kings. Yeah, Return of the King, that also won 11. And very famously, a film released in 1959 held the title for a very long time, also winning 11.
Oh, Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur, there you go.
Ben-Hur. Okay, Ben-Hur. Yeah, now you're talking. Ben-Hur.
That won 11.
Great.
And then of the others, I wouldn't have guessed any of these others. In at number 9, not number 9, but in with 9 is the film Gigi from 1958.
Yep.
There is The Last Emperor.
Oh,
it also has 9 films from 1987.
Bernardo Bertolucci.
That's right, Bertolucci. There's The English Patient with Ralph Fiennes.
Yes,
that won 9 from 1996.
I think that could have snuck in on one of our lists.
And there's the 1961 West Side Story, which won 10 out there on its own. Well, there we go. Okay, that was my first one, Slumdog Millionaire. Hit me with your first of 5.
Okay. I'm going to go for this one, The Aviator.
Wow, yeah, okay. I'd pretty much forgotten that. I think I watched that for the first time only about 5 years ago, but I also didn't see it popping up on my list. Presumably that was a best screenplay.
No, it's cinematography, editing, costume, production design, and best supporting actress.
What, so none of the big ones?
Well, best supporting.
That's not the one of the big five, is it?
Isn't it?
No.
But let's go Traffic then.
Okay, Traffic. What year are we talking for Traffic?
2001.
And who's the director of Traffic? I feel like I was talking about that.
Stevie Soderbergh.
Oh, Stevie Soderbergh. Do you know, yesterday I watched Erin Brockovich for the first time.
Did you like Erin Brockovich?
I did like Erin Brockovich. I'm now looking at the 2001 Oscars and I see that Julia Roberts won the best actress for Erin Brockovich that year. Oh, wow. Okay, so it's the same year as Erin Brockovich.
Amazing.
So Steven Soderbergh had a great Oscars.
You know, he split the difference. He split the vote.
He got to make one film with a very compelling actor who won a huge award, and then he got to make another film, which is a bad film, really, isn't it?
What? Which one? What are you talking about?
Traffic. The film Traffic.
I can't. You see, this could be a film I forgot.
Really?
I saw it when it came out. Everyone raved about it. I remember thinking it was fine.
I'm thinking of Crash.
Right.
I've got Traffic and Crash confused in my head for about 15 years.
I can see that happening because, one, they're both very much related to cars. Crash did very well at the Oscars as well, did even better. But that, yeah, Crash
has dated. It's Josh Brolin in Crash. He plays like a racist fireman or something that saves a...
That's not Josh Brolin.
Well, it looks like Josh Brolin.
It's Matt Dillon.
It's Matt Dillon, Josh Brolin. They're the same. They're the same guy.
They're definitely not.
They look the same.
Like, sometimes you say stuff like that and you think you can get it past me, but that's absolute nonsense.
What's his name?
Josh Brolin. Brolin is fucking No Country for Old Men. Matt Dillon is a nobody. He's
Matt
a nothing.
Matt Dillon.
Josh Brolin is absolute, like, he's nearing...
I get it.
He's
I know
not Vigo.
No, listen.
You have to listen. Eat your pie that I'm giving you. Okay, you've tried
what
to
what's this pie you're giving me?
Listen, Josh Brolin is in up there in the wheelhouse of Vigo, and you're trying to fob him off as he's like, oh yeah, he's Matt Dillon. Like, I misspoke when
I said they are the same. What I meant to say was they look the same to me. That not permissible?
No.
Audience members, please write in if you've ever misremembered that Josh Brolin was in the film Crash, or misremembered the film Crash as the film Traffic. I've never seen Traffic, so tell me about it.
I can't remember anything.
Listen
to a word I'm saying.
Not really.
I can't remember a thing about this fucking film.
Okay.
And that's why it wins the game.
I'll tell you what.
I feel like I've won a real strong point with it. I mean, actually, do you know what I haven't? Because you haven't seen it.
Because I haven't seen it. I was just about to burst your bubble, but you did it for yourself there.
No. I saw that. Anyway.
You did it on your own.
It was a really good guess.
Yeah. Do you think so?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I have nothing to say about it because I've forgotten everything about it.
Who do you think's older, Matt Dillon or Josh Brolin?
Josh Brolin?
Nope.
What?
Matt Dillon is 60 years old. Josh Brolin is 56 years old.
Mate, now give me that pie. I'm going to eat some.
And this pie it's full of egg. Okay.
Right, what's your go?
My next film is this film. It's The Artist from 2012.
Mate, we both lose a point.
Did you write it on your list as well?
Of course I did.
Oh, no.
This is why we both lose a point, because we're both... This is the film. This is the number one winner of this whole game, this film.
Probably.
That's all. So what's your contention?
My contention is not dissimilar. It won 5 Oscars. Of those, 3... are big ones, so it won.
I'm looking at them.
I'm not telling you. I'm telling the fucking audience. Oh my god, sorry, mate!
I can't wait until we go back
to you being the host. You cannot cope in this situation at all.
I can't.
Every instinct is to tell me you know. I know you know. We've both written it down. I'm telling the audience.
Okay. Sorry.
This film won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Best Director.
Yeah.
Best Actor.
Yeah.
And then also Best Costume Design. Costume design and original score. And also, the reason my contention is that this is probably the winner of all games, although ironically we've both lost a point here, is because at the time it was such a charming film. It was a very compelling watch. It swept everyone away. It had a dog in it that everyone loved, and the dog was at the Oscars and everyone was really excited about that too. And there was no question really that year that it was a deserving winner. And yet, it's just disappeared. And I think that's because of the silent factor. Like, I think it's just because some people just maybe weren't up for watching it, understandably. Because I can think of many more films that have won the Best Picture that I haven't enjoyed anywhere near as much as I enjoyed The Artist. And yet it's this one that has disappeared the most from the public consciousness.
I think it won big also. I think it's a pretty weak year again.
Let's take a look at the year.
Moneyball is knocking around.
Moneyball has really survived.
Yeah, that survived, but it's not quite... In terms of Oscars, it doesn't have the punch or the heft of an Oscar film.
No.
The Descendants, Alexander Payne, it's not kind of got the grit of Sideways.
That was tipped at the time. The Descendants was the film that was throughout that year picking up speed, probably the one that was going to win all of the big awards, and The Artist kind of came out of nowhere and stole it away. So it was a bit of a Hollywood story for that reason as well.
I'd say people don't talk about the Descendants anymore. And
no.
But maybe they should. I'd love to revisit it because it hasn't got that Sideways rewatchability. But then you've got Hugo.
Yes.
Which that's just there because it's Scorsese. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Tree of Life.
Yep.
And that's there because of Terrence Malick.
Sure.
That film has definitely not survived.
No.
And then the other big film of that year is just pure Oscar bait, and it's The Help.
Sure.
Which is dated horribly.
Yeah.
So it's a weak year. It's not surprising it's one of those won all those Oscars, because it's a celebration of cinema, and who belongs to the Academy? Lovies.
Yeah.
Actors. They all just want to celebrate themselves.
Yeah, yeah. This is the big theme that I watch the Oscars every year with my cousin Helen. And Helen, we play the guessing game beforehand. We both print out these little sheets and then guess who's going to win. I lose every year. But Helen's theory is always that if there's a film about Hollywood or about acting or about the history of Hollywood or even just the West Coast of America and something related to entertainment, the voters always vote for it because they do love to celebrate themselves. Okay, well, we lose points on The Artist, but what's your next film, Adam?
Argo.
Fuck, that's my next film. All right, go on. Tell me about your thing.
Argo also we're going to have to end up doing for this podcast.
Yeah. I think we should remember The Descendants was on my list for a while as well, but The Descendants, Argo, I think these are good films to do.
It was the 2013.
Yeah.
And I've got down for one Best Picture, Best Editing and Best Adapted Screenplay. So
yes,
it was up for a lot more. And I feel like when I found out what it actually won, it was a lot less than my memory of that felt like one of the bigger Oscar films.
Right.
It wins Best Picture.
Yeah.
You can't argue with that. But then... The year, you've got Life of Pi, you've got Lincoln, you've got Django Unchained, which barely wins anything, and you've got Silver Linings Playbook. That's some stiff Oscar competition, I'd say.
It's a stiff year.
It's a pretty good haul off the back of that, and Argo is a very deeply forgettable movie.
And the fun thing about Argo for me, the big gossip of the year, the Oscars that year, was, of course, Argo did win Best Picture. It wasn't really expected to. It was a bit of a surprise victory. And one of the reasons it wasn't expected to was because Ben Affleck, who was the director of the film, had been, quote, snubbed in the directorial category, despite winning lots of the other Best Director awards at these other awards ceremonies on the build-up to it. So it was a big talking point at the time.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to talk about at all in this chat. Like, all that kind of gossip, and it's all just so... Even if that's true, it's like, who, these people are so disgusting. These journalists writing about, like, whatever you say about Ben Affleck, he makes stuff.
Yeah, man.
He writes stuff.
Sure. He's an artist.
He does stuff. And everyone's like, oh, look, he's so, oh, Ben Affleck, he's so gutted. His ego is so thin. You're inventing this whole narrative and you're pretending that it's a real thing. It's a fantasy. It only exists because he made a fucking film and you're just off on the side twiddling your thumbs. I absolutely despise it.
I couldn't agree with you more. He was snubbed though. Now, here's a fun fact from the year of 2013 and the Oscars. You already mentioned this film, Lincoln. Nominated for 12 awards in this specific year. It only won two, right? So it was a bit of a disappointment on the night.
You look at that on paper, Lincoln, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Starring Daniel Day, DDL.
Yeah.
How is that not cleaning up?
Well, also, Sally Field was tipped to win in actress in a supporting role for her role as Mrs. Lincoln.
Yeah, why? She's barely in it.
Lost out to Anne Hathaway, mate, in Les Mis. You know, what are you going to do?
I didn't even mention Les Mis.
Mm-hmm.
That is, do you know what? You look at 2013, and that is what a year, a good year should look like. Awards spread across lots of different, very strong films. The idea of this clean sweep, it's just bollocks. Do you like the film of Les Mis?
I do like the film of Les Mis. Yeah, it's a little long. It took me a while to accept Anne Hathaway in the role.
Why is that? I don't know anything about the role or the musical or, you know, is it? What is it about?
Because Anne Hathaway's mother famously played the same role in the musical when Anne Hathaway was growing up. So for her, it was a kind of all of the media around it related to that. It was a lovely story that they all told over and over and over again on every chat show possible. And I can completely understand that being a real moment of emotional fulfillment for an actor, an artist in their career. It made it a little hard for me to sort of accept it.
Isn't it your fault for engaging with those programs before you watch a film? Just like watch the program. That's all new
sure.
info to me.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about that until you just said it. And I don't even care.
Right.
So, like, you're bore this fucking Hathaway baggage.
So the moral
this
here...
Graham Norton.
The moral here baggage. Is that you don't know and you don't care. And if you don't care, you can't be hurt. That's what you're saying, isn't it? Just to be clear, we both now only have three films on our list, of course, because I dunked out your artist and you dunked out my Argo. So I've only got two more to read. And this first one is Dallas Buyers Club 2014.
Never seen it, mate.
Never seen it?
Sorry, mate.
That's a bit of a surprise.
No, I've got no interest in that.
Really? Why not?
Because I hate Jared Leto, and it looked like such a craven attempt to win an Oscar.
Right.
So just forget it.
Oh, I forgot my bit of trivia from Argo. It was the Lincoln trivia, nominated for 12 awards and won just two. The film with the most nominations ever that didn't win any awards... From 1985, The Colour Purple was nominated for 11 awards and didn't win any. That's a sad night, isn't it?
That's a sad night. So I haven't seen it. So Dallas Buyers Club or Colour Purple. So do we just move back on to me?
I guess so. Oh, wait, no. Here's a fun fact about sort of related to the Dallas Buyers Club, because Dallas Buyers Club, it won three awards, Adam. You haven't seen it.
Yeah. So what year is it and what does it win?
It's 2014 and it wins Best Actor. And it wins Best Supporting Actor for Jared Leto. And it wins Best Makeup and Hairstyling. Fair enough. There's a lot of hair going on in this film. But here's the fun fact, okay? And it's kind of a quiz for you to be involved in, right? This was only the fifth film to win in both male acting categories, so both leading and supporting. The others were, and I'm going to read most of them and then get you to guess one, right? The others were Going My Way from 1944 with Bing Crosby and Barry Fitzgerald, The Best Years of Our Lives from 1946 with Frederick March and Harold Russell, Ben-Hur with Charlton Heston and Hugh Griffith, and then there's one other film. It's from the 21st century, and I wondered if you could remember what it was.
Is it The Cider House Rules?
No, that's a good guess, though.
So it's a film that won Best Actor and Best Supporting.
Yeah, and more importantly, it is a film that you are acquainted with.
Is it As Good As It Gets?
No, that's a good guess, though.
But that's Best and Best Actress.
That's Best Actor and Best Actress, yeah. An episode of this podcast is dedicated to this film.
Oh, it's Mystic River.
It's Mystic River. Sean Penn and Tim Robbins taking home the awards.
Tim Robbins is so shit. So shit in that film.
Well,
fucking hell.
He won an Oscar, so.
Absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
He's so bad in that film.
He is bad in that film.
And Sean Penn's pretty shit as well, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big old stinker Rooney of a year.
as was 2014. which was kind of a strange year.
What else is what else is floating around Dallas Buyers? Like what wins best picture?
Best picture, I think, is, let me just double check, but I think it's 12 Years a Slave. It is, which is a terrific film. It's just not one that I care to rewatch over and over again. For obvious reasons. The Wolf of Wall Street is out this year, so Leonardo DiCaprio was nominated for actor in a leading role in that. But something I did notice from this year and the previous year is that if you want to get an Oscar nomination as an actor, you really just need to appear in a David O. Russell film, apparently, because for American Hustle, Christian Bale was nominated in the leading role, Bradley Cooper was nominated in supporting role, Amy Adams was nominated in leading role, and Jennifer Lawrence was nominated in supporting role. And the year before...
Silver Linings
Playbook also received some acting nominations. So it's quite a, you know...
That's why he keeps getting his great casts off the back of...
They want to win.
They want to... They sniff a...
In fact, it was the same thing. There was the film spread across all four. We had Bradley Cooper in the main role, Robert De Niro, Jennifer Lawrence, and Jackie Weaver, all nominated again. So it's back-to-back for a Russell.
Back-to-back, yeah.
There you go. How about that, hey? Okay, what's your next film, Adam?
I mean, I'm not going to win with it, but I'm going to say it. I feel like it has very much been forgotten. A Beautiful Mind.
Oh, okay. Yeah, somewhat. I would say it's somewhat forgotten.
Best picture, best actress, best director.
What year is it?
That's 2002.
Yeah. Yeah, for the heft of awards, that probably is a forgotten, isn't it?
Even when it won, there was a stink on it, like, oh, you know, the scientist or the mathematician they'd based it on actually had said some horribly anti-Semitic things.
Oh, really?
So it already had a stink on as it was winning.
Right.
And it's just a very cheesy, if you watch it, it's just a very cheesy, obvious Hollywood Oscar movie of that era. It's bullseye. It does it all. I remember watching it and thinking it's pretty entertaining. Like when the reveal... The midpoint reveal. Can you remember what the midpoint reveal is?
The midpoint reveal is that he isn't actually working with the US government, right?
Oh, mate, you really soaked in my little structure lessons, haven't you?
I watched this film a lot. I think I had it on VHS, and so one of the reasons I came to this tepidly as a forgotten film is because it's really stuck in my mind as a movie. I can see it in my head now as we're talking.
But it is so... Do you know what I mean? It's so dated. People would not watch this film anymore.
No.
And it wouldn't get made anymore.
No.
But like, I guess people might chop it up and put it on like the bit in the bar when he talks about using maths to chat up girls. That's a little TikTok if ever there was one.
I think it was my first dance with Paul Bettany, though, around the same time that I would have seen A Knight's Tale that Paul Bettany's in.
That's when he's popping and Hollywood's thinking, wow, we have this real live wire. We can add some spice to our movies.
What is the spice with Bettany? I mean, I guess he went Marvel in the end, didn't he?
Yeah, he's a kind of poor man's David Thewlis.
Right.
So...
He probably is that, isn't he?
He can plug in. He's in some really shit, kind of odd fantasy horror films. There's one called Priest.
The Da Vinci Code as well, of course.
Yeah, he just... He's not a star, and so he just needs the material. If he gets slid into a good little film where he can flex his muscles, then he's great. But unfortunately, that kind of film doesn't come along enough. And he's just same for David Thewlis, who's phenomenally talented, but all there is for him is fucking Harry Potter. So we have to suffer. That's the best we get for Thewlis.
Yeah.
So there's that. I feel like it's a kind of a Pyrrhic victory for A Beautiful Mind there from me. The other films knocking around that year, you got Training Day,
oh,
Iris, Monsters Ball.
Monsters Ball, again, is really just largely celebrated for Halle Berry's performance, right?
And you got Gosford Park was the big Brit surprise.
Which has kind of stood the test of time, or at least it's been supplanted by Downton Abbey, and then everyone's thought that Gosford Park was Downton Abbey because it's the same director and some of the same actors and sort
it's
of the same thing.
It's not the same director. No.
Same writer.
Like Robert Altman directed Gosford Park. That's why Gosford Park is good, because it was directed by an American.
Here's another. To add a feather to your, tired bow, probably the most influential film of this entire Oscars year, I would say by a million miles, is Shrek, which won the animated feature.
Sorry, the most influential?
Yeah. On audiences. The stickiest film, the one that, you know, that is loved and still loved by audiences today is Shrek. The one that's been turned into more memes than I can throw a fucking shoe at is Shrek. You know, Shrek really stands the test of time. Everyone loves that film. And
are you trying to get a reaction out of me? Because it's
no,
working.
I'm being serious.
It's not influential, though.
I mean, of course it's influential.
It might have hung around like a shit in the toilet.
You don't think Shrek's influential?
It's not influential cinematically. It's not influenced anything comedically, visually, not at all.
You don't think so?
Cinematically, no.
No, I'm not talking about influencing other films. I said at the beginning, influencing the audience.
That's the only thing that matters. No, that doesn't mean anything.
Okay. I've got a slam dunk for you. Here's a slam dunk, yeah?
Slam dunk me.
Do you remember the film I Am Legend?
We all know I remember the film I Am Legend.
Do you remember the scene in I Am Legend where Will Smith sits on his couch and watches his copy of the film Shrek?
Yeah.
And he voices through all of Eddie Murphy's lines. And they're so fucking well known and so famous because the film is so famous and Eddie Murphy was so famous in the film that Will Smith, the character in a fantasy fucking world, knows the lines from that film. And that's in another film in this world.
That hasn't influenced it. That's just existing in the world.
Fuck's sake.
We're talking about different things. We're having a different argument.
I know. You've picked a definition for me so that I can't win. That's what's happened.
Well, that's how I win arguments.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
Hello, dear listener. Here's a lovely quick insert here into today's episode, because it was recently Adam's birthday, and so I got him a couple of podcast-related gifts to unwrap, and we thought we'd do that on the show. One of the gifts is relevant to a conversation we have in the second half of this episode, which is why it's dropped in here, but I hope you enjoy the gifts that I bought him. Adam, do you have the gift in front of you?
I'm holding the gift.
Terrific. Well, now listen, there's three gifts inside the gift. I would like you to open the gift in such a way as though you can remove them one by one without spoiling the surprise. Okay? Yes, the sound of an opening.
Okay, I'm going to
close. Okay, pull one thing.
Okay, I can see that. Okay, they feel like books. I'm pulling out the
they
first
are books.
One.
First one. Now read the title of the book to me.
Jesus Christ. The biography, Leonardo DiCaprio by Douglas White.
Wow. What a big moment.
I'm the king of the world. That was the cry from Leonardo DiCaprio as he stood astride the bow in Titanic, the movie that would go on to smash all records, raking in a whopping 1.1 billion worldwide. Yet although he's spent over 15 years at the top of his profession, Leonardo remains something of an enigma. His often daring movie choices suggest an actor still striving for perfection.
Well, no, and that's quite key because, you see, the fun thing about this book is, apart from it being the biography of Leonardo DiCaprio, and very appropriate for our podcast because he's a regular tenant here, is that it was published in 2013, so it's missing the last 11 years of DiCapricorn, and we will have to wait for volume two to catch up.
The last chapter is called The Great Catchby.
Yeah.
There's some horrible
Horrible chapter titles. That is the worst.
But for now, will you reach back into the box and grab book number two?
This could be good.
What did you find in there?
Danny Boyle,
yep.
Creating Wonder.
There he
in
is.
In conversation with Amy Raphael.
Mm-hmm.
How did the director of acclaimed cult British films become an Oscar winner and the driving force behind the defining cultural moment of 2012, the opening ceremony of the London Olympic Games? That's the least interesting question you could ask about Danny Boyle. I imagine basically that they called him up and said, Danny, do you want to direct the Oscars? Danny, do you want to direct the Olympic ceremony? And he said, yes. And that's it. That's the story,
yeah.
But they've put that on the blurb.
Well, listen, again, Danny Boyle, a director who is a common appearer on the Movies You Forgot podcast. We're certain that he'll come back at some point, so I figured that would come in handy. One slight snag, it was published in 2013. So again, it's missing the last 11 years of Boyle. Perhaps that won't be as impactful as it will with the Leo de Capricorn book.
But it's in a format that I really like.
A conversation.
It's a conversation, so it's none of that fluff and flannel. And I sit down and talk to Danny Boyle. It's just boom, boom, boom questions. So this is good, mate. This is a good book, and I can skip the Olympic chapter because I've got no interest.
Okay. Well, finally, pop that one down and reach back in for number three.
No, this one looks horrible.
what do you see?
It's a really cheap-looking book,
oh,
and
dear.
It says the films of Sam Mendes under 1 hour. The directorial authorship of American Beauty, Road to Perdition, Jarhead, Rev Road, Away We Go, Skyfall, and Spectre. This is really, really bad.
Is it a cheap piece of trash?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a film course. Each chapter says first 10 mins.
Oh.
Is on the authorship. Second chapter is second 10 minutes. So it breaks it down in how to teach it.
And so then, we could get some real gems out of Mendes to go on this podcast.
In Sam Mendes, we see a director cursed with a great blessing. While many of his contemporaries spent decades assembling impressive resumes before being handed the Oscar, Mendes has spent his career constructing an assortment of material in an attempt to validate himself. I don't know, is that a nice thing or a horrible thing?
I don't know.
The first chapter is called The Auteur Theory, and it explains The Auteur Theory.
Which we were talking about just recently on the Revenant episode.
Yeah, which I don't really know anything about other than I don't like it.
So maybe you could read that chapter and be educated.
I might. It's very thin. I could probably dip into this, but yeah, it's a horrifying looking book.
Great. Great news. Well, anyway, there we go. That's Leo. That's Danny Boyle, and that's Mendes on this podcast. I thought they were the hallmarks of Movies You Forgot so far, and that we should be happy as an audience to learn a little bit more about our three central protagonists. And indeed, if you do read them at any point in the future episodes, let us know how you get on. Perhaps I'll take the Leo one if you're not going to dive into it.
Okay, well, you're right, those were ship presents. And they don't count as presents. It's quite underwhelming. I don't know if it even counts as good podcast content.
Right.
But
you're really uncertain about the whole thing.
I'm actually quite excited to read the Danny Boyle book.
One out of three, baby. That's what they call me in baseball. And guess what? It only takes one hit to hit a home run.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a home run.
Oh.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Now, back to the episode. Before we do your final film, Adam, here's another little bit of Oscars trivia. You ready? The Jazz Singer was, of course, the first talkie movie in 1927. Any fool knows that. But in 1929, that was the first ever Oscars, the first ever Academy Awards held in 1929. Winner of the best film, still a silent movie. Yeah? Which, it was called Wings. Actually, it looks amazing remastered. I watched some of it earlier. Another one, a bit like that Technicolor fact, is they made the talkies. The talkies are out there, and they're still watching silent movies for a few years. The transition was slower
than we imagine. Yeah, we sit here now, we think they turned the television sound on, the talking, and then all of a sudden everything had talking in and everyone loved all the talking. But no, that's not how it happened.
I don't think anyone's imagining anything.
You don't think they're imagining that? Have you never sat around and imagined how quickly the transition from silent movies to talkies went?
I know I haven't, and I know other people definitely haven't. But it's interesting. Thanks to edifying everyone.
You're very welcome. And when I thought about that, I was thinking then, God, you know, you look back and you think the first iPhone release and everyone just bought it straight away. But that didn't happen, did it? It didn't happen. It took a while before everyone had an iPhone.
Yeah, sure.
But you think these things, don't you?
You think them. I mean, I don't. I don't think anyone gives it a passing thought.
When you look back at history, what do you think?
I don't think anything.
You don't think anything, no?
No, I think, well, that was boring and rubbish. I think, can we all just stop talking about history? Like, hey, Sam Mendes, guess what? I don't want to see four individual films about each individual Beatle told crossing across time.
Is that happening?
Yeah.
What?
Have you not read it?
Why would anyone do that?
Jesus, I always think that you're Mr. in the know, and you're so Mr. not in the know.
I'm Mr. 2 years later in the know. This is the thing. You've spent the entire episode jibing me about the fact that I imbibe the Oscars culture and the storylines behind the films, and there you are, licking your finger and turning the page in your little fucking premium grade print paper magazine, reading about films that won't even be fucking released for 4 years. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the future. You're kind of truffling at the trough of old news, and I'm suckling at the teas of new news. And the new news is that Sam Mendes he's got the rights to all the music, obviously, and he's going to make four separate films.
What?
About each individual Beatle, and they will all intersect and cross and over and, like, reflect each other.
What, like a Marvel universe?
It's the shittest, worst idea I've ever heard. And it's going to be just about the Beatles, so they'll all end with them on the roof. It's fine. There is a start point and an end point for when they got together and split up. So there is a timeline there. But even then, who's turning up to the cinema to watch the Ringo version? No one. Absolutely no one.
That is true.
And everyone's already going, who's going to play John? Ooh, should it be Barry Keoghan? Should it be?
If anything, he would play Paul, wouldn't he? Don't you think?
I think, no, you see, I actually want to get lured into that.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day we can recast the Beatles, because you've got your Sam Mendes book now. You could read all about his past, and then you could talk about the future and recast the Beatles movie.
Can we all just forget about history and forget about the past and just move on?
We can do that. Now, what's your next film from the past that you think has been forgotten by Oscar people?
This isn't going to work for you, but this is what I believe. It's Hurt Locker.
I mean, aren't we talking about that on the next episode?
So can I not do
alongside Jarhead?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very bold thing to suggest here.
I think everyone's forgotten this. It beat Quentin and Inglourious Basterds. It wins Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay.
The biggest story, obviously, from that Oscars, Don't Mind If I Let You Know. That doesn't make any sense. Let me tell you.
I don't mind it. I don't mind you don't minding it.
Don't Mind If I Let You Know is, of course, the director, Catherine Bigelow of Hurt Locker, used to be married to James Cameron. And James Cameron was hoping that Avatar would win it was predicted to win in many of these major awards. And Hurt Locker beat it out both in director and then in best film. And it was a wonderful Oscars occasion.
You see, that's something that's been a narrative that's been applied by other people.
Yes.
James Cameron's not sitting there thinking, I hope I beat my wife, my ex-wife.
The bookies had him as a favourite for both. So it was a surprise that he lost out. It just so happened that he lost out to his ex-wife.
I'm sick of it and I don't like it. And so anything you say, I'm just going to say, like, you know, I'll just be eggy about it. So it's, anything I say is meaningless. Anything I've said is of no consequence and has been deeply irrelevant. and deeply unhelpful, and I can only apologise. But, you know, you did want to do this.
Do you want to play the box office game?
I'd love to play the box office game.
Okay, Adam Richman. The box office game for the 2023 Oscars ceremony. Would you like to guess how much the budget was? I mean, how much it cost to put the ceremony on?
No, but if you're going to make me...
I am.
Which ceremony?
The most recent Oscars ceremony. And let me help you out with a little bit of a fact here. The red carpet alone cost almost $25,000. They're not skimping on the ceremony, Adam.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I get that. I get that much.
Uh-huh.
They're going to spend $10 million.
The 2023 Oscar ceremony cost $56.8 million.
It's obscene.
Which is more than most films we've discussed on this podcast.
I watched Greyhound, starring Timothy Hanks. Yeah, that cost $50 million.
You could get that instead of an Oscars.
I mean, I'd rather... I don't know what I'd prefer.
I've got three emails here to read to you before we close up shop. The first comes in from William August, who just says, worth a shot, and the title is Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Which I haven't seen, but is on Mubi at the moment, and it keeps showing it to me. So maybe I'll watch it and forget it in the future.
Watch it, because he says you should watch it. And I love that film.
Okay, I'll watch that one for you, William. Now, next one is from Nathan McGill. Nathan McGill says, hi both, I love the podcast. It's genuinely the podcast I look forward to the most. That's very nice. Thanks, Nathan. Makes my depressing job that little bit easier to cope with on a Monday. Well,
it makes my job, my depressing job on a Monday, easier as well to record it.
There you go. How about that? Just thought I'd send over a movies you forgot list to pick apart. I've forgotten everything that's happened in all of these films that I own in my house. But I have been diagnosed with ADHD, which affects my memory greatly. Joe, you may want to see a doctor and get diagnosed with this, from one leaky buckethead to another. And he sent a very useful list, which I'm not going to read out now, although Crash is on it, which we discussed earlier. So I'll add that to my list and I'll get you with it at a later date.
Well, I think it's fine to say, rattle through the list.
I'll rattle through the ones on the list that we've discussed on the podcast already, or ones that I haven't seen, so that they couldn't possibly be used.
Okay.
So Crash is mentioned. Body of Lies was referenced on here. We talked about that in the last few episodes. I don't know why we keep coming back to the Iraq War.
Body of Lies is a great shout.
Van Helsing I tried to get you with fairly early on. And also I rewatched it in the last year. And it's kind of fun.
Oh, I was going to say, it's too shit.
Yes. No, it is that. Yeah, for sure.
Is it too shit? Maybe.
No,
maybe
it's too shit. It is too shit.
Okay.
It's not shit. A good film. But it's just got Big Hugh in it, you know?
Big Hugh.
And what can you do when there's Big Hugh? You can't really do anything. Anyway, the other films on that list, I don't know what they are, so we'll move on. Now, Robert Lee.
If you don't know what they are, read them out.
No, I'd already clicked off the email. I didn't mean I hadn't seen them. I didn't know what they were. I just had already clicked off the email. Because I want to read the email from Robert Lee. Dear Adam and Joe, just wanted to share some ideas for future episodes. See, there's more here, Adam. Now, The Ghost from 2010.
If I'd seen that, that's such a great...
Haven't seen it.
...suggestion.
It did make me think of that Piers Brosnan film, though. The Ghost Writer. Remember that?
That's what that film he means.
Is that the same film?
It's not the same film. That's what it's called.
The Ghost Writer. This is called The Ghost.
It's the... It's called The Ghost.
No, it's called The Ghost Writer.
That's the Roman Polanski film.
Oh, it was called The Ghost in the UK. It was called The Ghost Writer everywhere else.
Yeah, no, I know. And I don't judge you for making that mistake.
To be honest, we could watch that. I had forgotten about that.
I've never seen it, though.
Oh, you haven't seen it.
But the thing is, I will watch it. I feel like we're going to have to start broadening things out where that is so plumb.
Sure.
We should do it, and I watch it, and then we chat about it.
Let's discuss that. I don't know. I'm not sure how... We've only done 35 films, right? We're not completely out of it yet.
No, no, but I think I'd love an excuse to watch The Ghost.
I think it's, you know, I said to my friend last night, that who I do a movie club with, we just watch a film every couple of weeks and chat about it, and we take it in turns to pick. I said, and we score them as well. I said to him, oh, do you know, it's been a long time since I've done the Ocean's films. Should we watch Ocean's 11? And he said, we could do, but I already know my score for it. And we try to avoid picking films that we already have, like, the score out of 100 in our heads. So there's a bit of surprise for us. And I was initially disappointed by that before remembering that I can just watch a film for fun. And in this instance...
Yeah, I get it, mate.
Shattered Glass, 2003. I've never seen that. I don't know what that is.
It's a nice little flick with Hayden Christensen. It's about journalism,
right?
Again, that would be something that's worth to watch on your own time.
Worth to watch. Yeah. The Best Offer, which was known as Deception in the UK from 2013.
Is that the Ben Affleck one?
I don't know. Let me have a look. No, it's Jeffrey Rush, Donald Sutherland, Jim Sturgis.
This is from the director of Cinema Paradiso.
Is it?
It's from Giuseppe Tornatore.
Well, terrific one, terrific but, news.
He directed Milena. Yeah, no, that's the film that no one's ever watched, I'm afraid. Not a movie you forgot.
Well, and maybe this last one, I don't know if this would be or not. It does have Elijah Wood and John Hurt in it. It's The Oxford Murders from 2008.
Yeah, same.
No one's ever seen that.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
I know of the film of which he speaks, but, you know.
Now, listen, Robert Lee also says, thanks for making my commute days bearable. Much love, Robbie. I don't want to throw any shade at Robbie because he seems like a perfectly lovely listener.
Well, he's got great taste.
You know, he's thrown a couple in there that, you know, do you think he's saying, hey, look at me and my film knowledge? Do you think he's trying to show us up? Or, well, what do you think's happening here?
No, I mean, I mean, I've heard of those films, Robbie.
You've heard of them.
You can't catch me out, but at the same time...
I haven't heard of them.
I haven't watched
Robbie
them.
Robbie does say that the latter, referring to The Oxford Murders, is unbelievable garbage. And he's gone to the effort of putting unbelievable garbage in bold for me to stress that it really is unbelievable garbage. It has one of the most baffling climaxes of all time, he says.
Mm. Sounds like sex with my wife.
That's the end. Thank the fucking Lord it's over. And next week we'll return to normal. You can be in your rightful throne of host again and feel...
Have you enjoyed being the host again?
No, I didn't like it.
Have you enjoyed it?
You made it hell for me.
I felt like I've made it difficult for you and you've not enjoyed any of it.
I think you've got an issue with security. That's what you've got. I want you to think about that before next week.
I think you need to think about why you're friends with me, because I don't think you realise who I am.
Listen, man.
I don't understand what you thought was going to happen.
A, I know who you are, and B, we locked in a long time ago and it's too late now, so there's no going back, okay? I'm not a loser, I'm not a quitter, I'm not giving up on you. You're just going to have to change more, okay?
Listen, I really tried halfway through to apologise, and it didn't work.
It did. You did a good job. And now look at us, laughing away at the end of an episode, before we say goodbye to the listeners. They think, they're at home thinking, these two, putting it on, having a laugh, having a snap at each other, corner. Oh, what are they like? They don't know.
They have no idea how close this episode was to being even more of a car crash than it actually was.
Okay, well, there we go. Now, will you be watching the Oscars, Adam?
Absolutely not.